Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus. I'm C. Red Fred, your host for the show. Special treat for you today. Betsy Cash Money, fixture on X with all of us, who's talked Bulls for many, many years, is going to be joining me in this interview. Doug, unfortunately, couldn't make it this time. He's getting ready for some travel, but don't worry. Doug will be back on the bus soon, and we'll get a show out. Tomorrow, we're going to have one with Alejandro from Bulls on Tap. Great dude that I had the pleasure of meeting a few weeks ago at the Bulls Creator event. Great dude, great mind, true Bulls fan. I knew we had to get him on the show, so look for that one sometime on Friday. Before we dive in, I wanted to share some quick thoughts on the Bulls' recent draft pick. Noah Essengay, young kid. I was worried that they might make the mistake of drafting Derek Queen, a guy who can't shoot the three or defend at a high level. Frankly, reminds me of a poor man's Vooch. That's not the kind of player I want closing out playoff games. So they took Noah. They didn't go that route. Instead, they took a player that brings some, I'd say, some defensive versatility, something that's absolutely vital in today's NBA. Just look at the numbers. The top 13 teams in defensive efficiency all made the playoffs. The bottom seven, all lottery teams. There's not a more telling metric when it comes to playoff success. I think he's going to bring some legit rim protection eventually. He's got a 9-foot standing reach, but we need to temper expectations at least for year one and two. I don't expect much of it at all from him this year, and that's okay. If you look how Billy Donovan has handled our two young players, Patrick Williams, he just gave him a lot of minutes to run free, and he, you know, in the end failed. And when you look at Modest Bouceles, I thought Billy did it right. You know, Modest earned his minutes. He wasn't handed anything, and by the end of the year, we saw that growth. I'm hoping for a similar approach with Noah. He's nowhere near Modest offensively. Maybe defensively down the road, he'll be able to be a better, more impactful player. You know, his defense can earn him some early time on the floor. If he puts in the work, bulks up, sharpens his skill set, you know, who knows? But I don't really see anything for the next 2 years. He's an offensive project, no doubt. I really wanted Cedric Howard. I still think he would have been a perfect fit, but he was off the board. So this kid's got undeniable physical tools. If he develops, he could become a real asset. Let's be patient. Let's not, get on Billy if Noah's not getting major minutes early. Rushing a raw player like that too fast can really crush a kid's confidence and just absolutely ruin him. So let's give him some time to grow. All right, and on to the interview with Betsy Cash Money. Stay tuned. Probably in the next 24 to 36 hours, you'll hear a show with Alejandro from Bulls on Tap. Hope you enjoyed this interview with Betsy Cash Money. Until next time, go Bulls.
Bulls are out of timeouts. 2 seconds left. Giddy for the win!
Through the city where the legends play, Chi-town vibes on a sunny day. Big red bus with the seats in line, talking Bulls all day, we stay on the grind. Rolling down the lane in the big red bus, see Red, Fred, and Doug bring the Bulls to discuss. From the Jordan days to the present fuss, it's gold in the convo, so ride with us.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the streets of Chicago. I look to my right, and lo and behold, Doug Tonis is not here. He's on making big plans for a vacation. But stepping into the seat is the great Betsy Cash Money out of New York. How you doing, BC? What's going on?
Hey, I'm good. How are you, Fred?
I am living the dream. Things are going great. Enjoying the summer. It's hot here in Chicago. How is that out in NYC?
It's good. You know, it gets a little quieter here in the summer. Kind of empties out. People go on vacation, so it's nice.
Before we get started, I just question, since you are in New York, what was the situation like with that run that the Knicks had this year?
Oh, gosh. It was crazy. Shout out to Knicks fans. They really are a passionate bunch, but it was crazy. I actually live like pretty close to the arena, so like I could hear them, my apartment. So they really love the Knicks, New Yorkers. Gotta give them credit.
But I'm so glad after, I know you saw the video of that poor guy wearing the Halliburton jersey getting thrown trash in his way.
Oh yeah, that was rough. They didn't deserve that, but I mean, you know, I'm a Brunson girl, so I love all my Villanova guys, so. I was enjoying it. I'm not going
to
lie.
That's right. I forgot about that. You went to Villanova. I got to tell you, though, as a Villanova grad, are you not embarrassed of that AT&T commercial? I've seen that like 1,000 times, and every time it gets worse. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't know. For me, it really hits home. I tear up a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
The 900th time you've seen it, you're still tearing up every time it comes on? Is that true?
Yeah, it really hits home. It really hits home seeing Dante sent away like that. It was harsh.
I will say, I was scared to death the Knicks are going to hire Jay Wright. Because I think he is the best living coach. He's one of my heroes. I love Jay Wright. I think he's
I'm a huge Jay Wright fan too, but I don't know. He seems pretty happy in retirement, so
yeah, but
I don't know about that.
Do you agree that would have been the best choice for this team?
I'm a Jay Wright fan, so I kind of want to say so, but there's the track record of college coaches in the NBA isn't, sometimes it's not great, so I don't know. Maybe it would have been different with Jay Wright just because he's an amazing coach and he has a relationship with the Villanova guys, but
look at the success Billy Donovan's had. Come on.
Let's
move on to more important topics. So BC, I gotta tell you, I love your tweets whatever you call it on X now these days. I really think they're always well thought out. I usually agree with, I'd say about 85% of what you post. I found myself nodding my head, and I love how you take on DT and get him irritated. So that's always fun too. But, I did want to get your thoughts. Let's start out with the Bain trade, which I thought was an abomination. I mean,
surprised to hear that.
Real, I'm not a fan of the guy who, you know, Bain's a nice player. He's a good player, but when you have to bend over to zip up your pants, like your wingspan is an issue. It's not something you can fix. Like I think there's limitations. I don't care how good he is as a defender. It's not something that's going to get better. I just don't understand why giving up all those picks. Having unprotected picks is extremely dangerous. You're one injury away from being a lottery pick. And I don't know. I don't think he's worth it. What say you?
So I think, to be honest, I think the exact opposite. I'm a big Desmond Bane fan. I think he's a really good player. And I think he fits it really exactly what the Memphis Grizzlies, what the Magic are looking for. I know there was, I see them, you know, being mocked a lot in trades for various point guards. But, you know, when we're looking at like how they see themselves, it seems pretty clear based on, you know, the acquisitions they've made over the years that like they really view Paolo and Franz as their primary ball handlers. So like I never really saw like Darius Garland or any of those, you know, names that people were throwing around. Like I always thought that was kind of like wish casting. Like that never seemed like something that they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I think for how they want to run their team, a guy like Desmond Bain, who just gives you some shooting, gives you a little bit of, you know, tertiary playmaking, but doesn't take the ball out of Paolo and Franz's hands and just brings so much as a shooter and a floor spacer. Like, I really think that that's kind of the perfect fit for them.
Do you think that acquisition was enough to propel them ahead of the Knicks? I'm going to name a few teams. Tell me, next year, are they better than the Knicks?
First of all, I think it depends a lot on health, which has not been on Orlando's side the last few seasons, to be honest. So I think that it also really depends on how you view Paolo and Franz. I know that those can be kind of like, I don't know if controversial is the right word, but I know that Paolo gets some criticism because of his efficiency and his, you know, the type of shots that he takes. And, you know, I'm a big Franz fan, but he does need to improve from the 3-point line, from, you know, beyond the arc.
Absolutely.
So I think the reality is, like, if this trade doesn't work out and eventually, like, you know, you tell me 5 years from now that they never made it past the second round, like, honestly, I would say that if that's the case, it's probably because Paolo and Franz didn't take the leap that a lot of people, you know, myself included, think that they can take. Like, if this somehow ends badly for them, I don't think it's going to be Desmond Bane. I think Desmond Bane's pretty much a known quantity as far as, like, what he brings. And frankly, like, I don't think there's really an incentive for the Grizzlies to trade him for anything less than they got. I mean, he's a really good player, and, you know, I totally agree that those picks, unprotected picks, can be scary, but there's also a pretty good chance that not a single one of those picks actually turns into a player as good as Desmond Bane.
Yeah.
So if I'm the Grizzlies, I'm saying, like, you know, I'm not trading him unless you make it worth my while. They thought that Bane was their guy, and let's see if it works.
He had a horrible playoff this year. I mean, of course, he's playing Oklahoma City, so it's understandable. And obviously, there's issues with that team.
Pretty overmatched by OKC's defense in general.
And Ja got hurt during the playoffs, etc. Mm-hmm. but just made me feel better about him as a player. Like, so what do you really like about him outside? You mentioned his ability to play off ball. I know he could shoot really well from three, but it just,
I mean, you're saying that like that's not like a really important skill that Orlando desperately needs.
Well said. That is true. I always feel like a player like him is so limited. And like, when was a guard that size really a dominant game changer in a
fight? I mean, I don't think he needs to be dominant though. I think he just kind of needs to be, I think that Orlando really sees themselves and they see Paolo and Franz as like a wing combination, kind of, like what Tatum and Brown are. And they think that, if these young guys continue to take a leap, they can surround them with, guards who are kind of in the mold of Drew and Derek White. And, it seems like they really want to do that, Boston Celtics thing where they kind of do, playmaking on the aggregate, coming from all five spots on the floor.
Right.
So I feel like in that sense, Bane is a really good fit. And again, if it doesn't work out and they don't, they can't take the leap into that next tier of Eastern Conference teams, I think it's going to be because Paolo doesn't ascend to what the Magic think he can be.
And Franz keeps on shooting horrifically from three. I don't get it. I don't know why he hasn't improved from there. Like, his usual trajectory from a guy who allegedly has a really good work ethic is to improve there. And I mean, that's a huge fault.
I agree, but that's kind of why I'm like optimistic that it will come around.
All right. Well, so, but quickly, just let's run through the teams. The Knicks, are they better than the Knicks with Bane now? Let's say both teams remain healthy. Great. Suggs is always hurt, but let's say they come back.
I mean, I think that the Knicks would have, I think that they would be comparable, but I think that the Knicks would have the best player in the series, so I'm gonna take the Knicks.
How about Boston?
Well, I mean, with Tatum out,
yes.
I think that they,
Tatum's out, right? So, I mean.
Yeah, so I think that they would be, I mean, they took, I know that that series didn't exactly look close when you look at the final score, but I mean, there were times where I felt like it was closer than it seemed. So I'm going to say, yeah, they would be better than Boston this year. Obviously with Tatum, their best player being out.
You'd still have Cleveland ahead of them, right?
Yeah.
Milwaukee? Oh, I forgot. You're not a Donovan Mitchell fan. That's right. Is that right?
No, he's grown on me. He's really grown on me. And, I think he's really taken a leap in Cleveland. So I'm going to roll back some of my takes from a few years ago that was after a really poor playoff performance from him. So.
Well done. I love that. That's great. Absolutely right to if you make a take like I have. I've made mistakes, one or two times.
Right. I mean, I stand by that take at the time based on how poorly he played in that series. I think he's really taken a leap, honestly, since he got to Cleveland.
Okay. Well said. Milwaukee.
I'm going to say Orlando.
I would agree with there. So how about the Bulls? Never mind.
I mean,
the team I like is the Hawks, actually.
I do too, and I'm glad you said that because I've been getting a lot of I'm a huge Jalen Johnson
Me
stan.
Too.
I've been since day one.
Right. So yeah, that's the one team that kind of scares me.
At this point, I still think that Orlando would be better than them, just because the Hawks still have a lot of holes to fill. I think they're heading in the right direction, surrounding Trey with a lot of these really interesting pieces. But at this point, I would still say Orlando's better.
I guess my biggest issue with this trade is I just feel like that fourth first round pick, what year is that last one in?
2030.
Yeah. I mean, that is a lifetime away. And
it's true.
It's entirely possible. You get one bad injury and you have a transformational player at the top of the draft and you lose that. To have that unprotected, it's not, you couldn't even get it to the Acme level, top four protected is really, man, is that dangerous for a player that's never made an all-star team. I just feel like, wow. It's kind of like the Mikal Bridges, to a certain extent, like that old deal. But at least I felt more comfortable about the Knicks definitely being good.
I think that the way you see this trade really is a reflection of like how you see Paolo and Franz. Like if you think that they're wings that can ascend to, the next level, then this trade probably looks really good. But if you think that, Paolo's never going to improve his efficiency. He's never going to be able to, change up his shot diet. Like, then maybe you feel differently about this trade. But I do think that, saying Desmond Bane is a guy who's never made an all-star, I feel like that's a little bit just because, being a guard in the West, I mean, it's so tough to be like.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I feel like even Devin Booker's a fringe all-star at some point in the West just because of how deep the guard pool is there.
Yeah.
So I feel like that kind of undersells him as a player.
I think what they're trying to do is replicate what, Fred VanVleet brought to Houston and essentially But I still think that's what's going to leave them at is, you're right. It doesn't matter. Apollo ends up being that guy and, you know, just incredible down the stretch. And we saw signs of that against Boston. I thought he was great in some of those games. Then yeah. It won't matter. So I do want to get into the Durant trade. I mean, I'm like just absolutely shocked at the deal that the Suns made. I am not a Jalen Green guy. So let's just get into your thoughts first and I'll provide mine. What was your initial thoughts when you saw the trade? Were you surprised at the
To be honest, I wasn't surprised just because Houston always made the most sense, in my opinion. It made the most sense for him as a destination, but I think it also made the most sense for the Suns just because, like, you know, some of the things I was hearing about, like, what the other offers were, that were just really, like, not good. Correct. And, you know, the Rockets are so, I mean, they just have so many assets and, you know, they actually had to make a consolidation trade at some point. If it wasn't going to be KD, it could have been someone else. But like what they could have offered, I mean, their worst offer was better than, you know, what a lot of teams could give. So I actually thought it made a lot of sense. But, you know, the more I think about it, the more I really just love it for Houston. Like I really don't see I mean, it's hard to say that there's no risk in a trade, but like this is one of those rare cases where, you know, he checks basically every box that they needed without, you know, there's not a ton of downside. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that it makes them a perfect team, but it does check every box for what they needed to accomplish this offseason.
Yeah, well said. And I agree too. Like I think there's like a 1 or 2 year window. I think Durant is quietly kind of declining pretty fast. And that's not unusual at the advanced stage that he's at. I mean, my goodness, he's, what is he, 37, 38 years old?
Yeah, 37.
It's crazy. Guys are playing, you know, but that's the point. There's not a lot of guys playing at 37 or 38. And, you know, I just thought the biggest thing, my biggest issue was with Houston was down the stretch, basically Freddie, and that was it. Like anybody else I trusted, I didn't trust anyone else in that team. It, you know, the least trust I had was with Jalen Green, who I thought was
I can't lie. Like, and I'm not a Jalen Green hater, but like he did have a really rough postseason. And they just, in that Warriors series, they needed him to be basically like what he could, like they needed the actualized version of what he theoretically could be. And he just could not do any of it. Like couldn't get a shot, couldn't get a bucket. Like,
Bad decisions, bad ball handling.
He
reminds me, like, I think you're a Zach LaVine fan. I'm a Zach LaVine fan too. I think he embodies all the worst aspects of Zach LaVine's game.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I've been saying for a while, which is, you know, why I used to put them in the trade machine for Zach. It's like, what if Zach, like, wasn't actually efficient, wasn't actually a good shooter? What would he be? It's like, well, he would be Jalen Green, to be honest.
Exactly. Like a younger version of Jalen. I would say Jalen Green's definitely a little bit better defensively, I would say.
Absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, in Jalen Green's defense, I actually think he's pretty underrated defensively. I think he's taken a leap in the last few years, especially since Ime, you know, took over in Houston. But especially, like, as a one-on-one guy, like, I've been a little bit impressed. Like, he's definitely, like, the guy you're going to target on the floor when he's out there. But I mean, he gets talked about as if he's like a traffic cone, and I really don't think that he is. Like,
I agree. Yes, I was very impressed with him in the Warriors series on the defensive end. I thought he was way better than I'm not going to lie. I probably watched on, I can count on one hand the amount of times I watched the Rockets. I did watch that entire series intently because of my disgust with Jimmy Butler and his antics this past season. So I was cheering intently for the Rockets. I just felt like, my goodness, this guy sucked the whole series outside of the one game where he had 38 points and just had no faith in him at all. He is a young player. I guess you're probably right. Like, I mean, some of the rumors of the Miami's offer was like,
it was like Andrew Wiggins and some second round picks or something.
this is a joke. I mean, like, honestly, the Bulls could come up with something better than that. I mean, it's crazy, some of these offers. So
it is crazy. And I do feel bad for Suns fans, but I mean, in fairness, like, I'm someone who's generally like very, very cautious about, you know, putting a lot of assets on the table for guys at the end of their career, because we have a pretty decent sample size of that not working out, of that not, you know, ending well. So I get the hesitance, but this Rockets package that they put on the table, like, I feel like it's just one of the rare cases where, like, it really had, you know, not a ton of risk. I mean, they really had to consolidate, especially like at the wing, you know, they kind of opened up minutes for Tari, for Jabari, Amen. So, you know, you knew that someone was going to be bad men out. I'm not surprised it was Dylan. Although I think that Dylan is going to be harder to replace defensively than people are, you know, expecting.
Agreed too.
I think he's actually a pretty good backup, or I mean, a pretty good pickup for the Suns. Yeah, I think that it's, I'm hesitant to say that it's like, you know, an A-plus trade, because, you know, the response I was getting a lot was, you know, well, it doesn't make them a contender. And sure, that's true. You know, they still do have holes. They're not a perfect roster, you know, especially I'm looking at the starting lineup.
Are you talking about Houston? You don't think it makes them a contender? Legit contender?
Or
are
you, I mean, I think it depends how you define contender. I guess the West is so deep that, like, if they were a play-in team, honestly, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, any team in the West could be a play-in team other than OKC. And I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest, because the West is just such a slog in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Let's play that game that we played with Orlando. Like, would you agree? I think they've absolutely passed the Warriors with this move.
Yeah, probably.
How about the Lakers? Yes.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Absolutely. I love their team defensively. To me, this was the thing they didn't have, is a guy that could get calls from the officials at the end of games, who was a guy you could go to save it when the shot clock was running out, to create something.
Yeah, you know, a late game scorer, a bucket getter who actually gets buckets, you know, which Green really struggled to actually do in the playoffs. Just, you know, reliable, consistent, off the dribble guy, and just half court efficient scoring. I mean, they needed that so badly. So, and I think, you know, they do lose a little bit of athleticism with Green, but, you know, this also opens up a bigger role for Cam Whitmore, a guy who, look, I know he has flaws, but another Villanova guy that I want to see succeed. So
there we go. I thought you were going to say Reed Sheppard, and I'm like, Cam Whitmore. There, it's the Villanova tie-in. It's Reed Sheppard. Like, that guy better play. I cannot believe.
Well, of course. I mean, he was a top three pick for a reason. He's obviously going to get, you know, this gives him a chance. It was a little crazy that he wasn't able to crack the rotation last year, but I mean, that's just a testament to how deep they were and why they needed this consolidation trade in the first place. Because, you know, they didn't have minutes for him. They didn't have minutes for Cam. They didn't have minutes for this 10th pick. So, you know, they sent all of this. I mean, and I don't mean to say they gave up nothing, because they did give up players and picks, but they were assets that they didn't have a use for. Correct. So in that sense.
Yeah. Agreed.
You know, they get this upside of KD. And you know, it gives them a little more than that too. It gives them, you know, you have another year to really evaluate what you have. Like, how good can, you know, Amen Thompson really be? Because I know that there are a lot of people who are, like, really, really high on him as, like, a future, you know, maybe even a max kind of player.
Are you not?
No, I am, but I mean, he's still young.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
He could be a max player, or he could be Ben Simmons. So, you know, that's kind of remains to be seen.
How dare you?
No, I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just like the reality is, like,
just came out that way. Ben Simmons, oh my gosh. He is so far ahead of Ben. I mean, like, I'm just saying,
like, if the shot never comes around, like, he's this incredible prospect.
Yeah.
But right now he's a non-shooter, and frankly, so is Şengün. So at some point, you know, they still have two non-shooters in the starting lineup. And so this, you know, it checks some of, like I said, it checks all the boxes that they needed to check this offseason, but it doesn't make them a perfect team. So I understand that. I mean, it opens up a bigger role for these young guys. They can see what they have in Cam Whitmore as, you know, the guy he's gonna kind of replace Jalen Green, I think, as the guy who, you know, athletic bucket getter who puts pressure on the rim. So we'll see. We'll see what they have in all these young guys.
Şengün's a guy I can't stand. Like, I understand he made the All-Star team and he's a good offensive player, but to me, that team needs a rim protector, an elite rim protector.
So, you know, it's a lot of people have been saying that. I actually thought that he was better defensively last year than offense. I think, like, he's taking a leap defensively. Like, I totally get people, you know, I think he's, like, really an eye of the, he's an eye of the beholder type of player, and like how you see him. I know people who think that he's like, you know, Sabonis 2.0, but I also know people who think he's like Jokic 2.0. And I don't think either of those are really fair, but I think he really moved me this year with the leap that he took defensively. And I think that at this point, what's a little more concerning is, like, you know, he's about to start, like, his rookie deal is done. He's about to become, like, a real, you know, $30-something million player. And, like, the efficiency was really not great last year.
Yes.
So I'm kind of wondering, like, that's something that has to improve.
Absolutely. And it starts with, you can't make free throws at an acceptable rate. It's a huge problem. So if you're knocking down free throws in the 60s as a center, I really, unless it's Shaq O'Neal, I have zero use for you. And I thought he killed them in the playoffs with his missed free throws. I love the team. So many players on that team. I just feel like that's what was missing with them is just an athletic defensive interior presence. You don't need him to be an offensive player. You got plenty now. But we'll see. I mean, he's a very tradable guy. I'm sure there's guys in the league that would move him. If you drop the Congo on that team, I think he'd be a much better fit. Yeah.
Let's go. There's still a lot of people that are really high on Şengün. And I see it. I mean, I see both sides. And I'm someone who tends to be very, very skeptical of, like, you know, I agree with you in theory about, you know, bigs who aren't rim protectors. It's really hard to make that work at a high level. I mean, unless you're literally like a Jokic caliber, you know, offensive player, like that is a hard archetype to make work. So I do understand the hesitance, but I really think that he took a leap defensively this year. So that's to me, at least, like, that's, if you told me that a few years ago, that would have changed my outlook on him, because I feel like it's a little easier maybe to improve the shot than, so I feel like his ceiling has been raised as a player based on what we saw defensively this year.
Well said. BC, what's, we got to get a little bit of Bulls here. I know.
Okay.
I know, you're not eager to do so, but
the Bulls have been, they've been depressing for a while now. I can't lie.
Where are you at? Are you a fan of the Bulls? Are you a fan of the
Bulls? I mean, I am, but they're just, I mean, what's there to be a fan of?
Kobe's been good. I love Kobe. Right, let's start with this.
No, Kobe, I love Kobe too. He's a very good player. He's not like an incredible player, but he's a very good player. And it's unfortunate that the Bulls are not able to take advantage of how good his contract is.
I'm constantly amazed at the amount of Bulls fans who still want to put a ceiling on Kobe White. Like, how many times is he going to have to, like, crush through the ceiling before we're going to finally say, like, there was, like, people poo-pooing the fact he was the Eastern Conference Player of the Month in March. Like, you can count on one hand, I think, in the last 30 years, Bulls have done that, you know? And so, like, I mean, that's a major accomplishment to be that good for an entire month. I think unequivocally he'll be an All-Star this year. I believe that with all my heart. And everybody's like, well, what else can he be? Well, how about hitting a three at a 40% rate? That would open up everything else for him. He's never really done that. He's always been like around 37, which is good. It's not great though. Like 40 or higher.
He's also always been a little bit streaky. Like there'll be periods where he's just like a flamethrower and then there's.
Yeah, well said. You're right. Absolutely. But yes, to be more consistent.
I guess what I'm saying is he has been a 40% 3-point shooter for a month, but then it's followed by so on the aggregate, he's more like, you know, 37, 38.
Yes, exactly. And I think his career high is like 38 and change. He's never hit 39, never hit 40. I just want to see him do that. And if he can do that, I think that's the next level. But I mean, he impressed me.
I agree with you on all that. I think he's a really, really good player. But at this point, I think that one of the best things about him, frankly, is his contract. Like he's one of the more dynamic guards in the East on a basically an MLE level deal.
Yes.
So it's like, that's just such an asset, and the Bulls are just not in a place to take advantage of that because they're just not good, you know, like
right.
That kind of value contract has a lot of value, frankly, and it's why I'm just at the point where, you know, I really do think that they should trade him and let him go somewhere where he can win, or, you know,
I thought Orlando would have been perfect. I'd be honest with you, I thought Orlando would have been fine. He would have really thrived there, but
and you know, there's an alternate timeline where they actually don't have to trade for Kobe White because they took him in the Vooch trade, and instead of, you know, Wendell triple single Carter or whatever. But
don't start. Oh, that's right. That's the other one I disagreed with. Yeah, there's like there's a few things we disagreed vociferously on, and that's one of them. I'd love to. WC, you know, actually his godfather is my son's high school basketball coach, believe it or not.
Oh, okay. So that's why you're such a fan then.
No, that's just that. He just got named coach this year as he's going into his junior year. But that said, it's one of the many reasons I love him. I love Wendell Carter Jr. I don't want to argue here with you, BC, because I agree with most of the things you have to say, but let's get into, I'm going to throw a couple quick questions at you.
Okay.
What dollar amount do you want to pay? Well, first of all, do you even want to sign Giddey? Give me your thoughts on Giddey.
I don't have a problem signing him. You know, I know this is going to sound a little bit depressing, but the Bulls are at a point where, like, they're just not really good enough or relevant enough, frankly, for a bad contract to really hurt them. You know, if you're a good team with visions of, you know, being competitive, having bad money on your books could be, like, just the worst thing. But for what the Bulls are trying to do, it's like, I'm fine with them taking a swing on Gideon, seeing if he can improve and, you know, turn into a decent player. And I mean, is that a depressing answer? I'm honestly fine re-signing him.
What's the dollar amount that you, number one, would like to see him sign him at? And what's the realistic amount?
I mean, I would like to see it as low of a number as possible, but it's not going to be low. I think it's going to be higher than a lot of people expect. And I know for a fact that the Bulls are going to get made fun of once that Shams tweet hits the notifications that he just signed for $30 million annually or some. I think that's probably what it's going to be. And you know what? I'm fine with it. If the Bulls ever get to a point where they're so good that Josh Giddey's contract is hurting them, then I think that that's a win. So okay. Let's hope that day comes.
Do you want Vooch to be traded?
If he has value, I don't think that he does, but if we could get a few seconds out of him.
What about the rumors with Golden State? All the rumors going on with,
Kuminga?
Yeah, Kuminga. What's your stance on?
Oh, gosh. I'm not a huge Kuminga fan. I'm not a Kuminga hater either. I see the vision, you know, the athleticism. I get it. But to be honest, I'm of the opinion, like, if you ask me, should the Bulls trade for basically any player? My answer is usually no, just because, like, I just don't think that they're good enough right now to be at a stage of asset acquisition. That's my bottom line. They're at the take on bad money for picks stage of the rebuild still.
If they can get Kuminga, though, for like 20 a year, like what they're paying Vooch right now, I think that's a good deal, first of all, for Golden State to do that. Because I think Vooch, if he can replicate what he did this year, which I highly doubt that he can, but if he's going to hit 40% from three and replicate that, he's going to absolutely help, you know, Golden State.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I do not think he's going to continue shooting 40% from three, which is why I thought that they should have traded him when he was actually doing that, just because I wasn't confident that it would continue. Would Golden State agree to that, though? I'm not sure that they would do a Vooch for Kuminga. I was thinking more of like Vooch for a second round pick type of swap.
I'd be fine with that, too. I do think, though, you might have to add something else to get the deal done with Golden State. I've kind of warmed up a little bit on the Kuminga idea just because I feel like he's a player that's not fit for that offense in Golden State. I think he's a much better fit here in Chicago the way we're doing things now. And I think he would really thrive in this type of environment. I don't know.
I agree. I'm not opposed to him at all. Just as, in principle, it's more the idea of like, I don't think that the Bulls should be giving up assets for basically anyone because I just don't think that they're good enough to be doing that at this stage. I mean, last time they gave up a bad team giving up assets can end very poorly, as we saw with the Vooch trade. Those two first round picks turning into, you know, one of them is Franz. So
yeah, don't
listen better than anyone on the Bulls. So I'm just that's my moment nightmare scenario for the Bulls is that they have delusions that they're better than they are and they become buyers instead of sellers.
My dream is they trade Vooch and really try to aggressively tank this year. But I think you would concur, like White and Giddey in the backcourt is good enough in this East to at least keep them out of the conversation and one of the worst teams in the conference, especially with
I agree with that, but I'm not sure that that's what they should be doing. Like I would prefer that they were in the conversation of being 100%. Worst teams in the conference and eventually getting a pick. Eventually it would be nice to get a draft pick that's like not, you know, 11 or 12, but. Maybe. That's probably too much to ask for us.
Yeah, maybe it could be like number four and take Patrick Williams. Let's go over some of your other comments and some of these players. Like, in your opinion, what's the move Acme has made in his 5 years here? Somehow he was granted an extension. What to you is the worst move on his resume? The Patrick Williams at four, the extension with Patrick Williams for 5 years with a player option, the Vooch trade, the extension to Vooch. Like,
I mean, for me, the original sin of Karnišova's regime is always going to be the Vooch trade. You know, I fought with Doug at the time, but I got to admit Doug was right. So shout out to Doug for that. But for me, that's always going to be just the original sin of giving up those two picks for a guy that had a pretty low ceiling. And at the time he was shooting 40% from three, but there was a very small sample size of that happening. And we now know that like a lot of those empty arena shooting numbers in 2021 were very fraudulent. Exactly. Like a lot of those guys like Vooch and Julius Randle have never again been 40% free throw, they're 3-point shooters. So it was, you know, they bought at the absolute worst time. And to me, that was just what, you know, set them off in the wrong course of action.
It's the consistent theme of these guys. That's the issue, is they always buy high and they always sell low. Even with, you know, look at DeMar DeRozan, which I thought was a great move. DeMar had a lot of good years here.
Mm-hmm.
You still give up a first round pick for him. You didn't need to trade. In reality, I think you were kind of forced to add that first round pick in order to get the carcass of Aminu off the roster. That was part of the Vooch trade, you know, and then you send out Thad Young, who then became a number one, returned a first round pick for the Spurs, you know, like, so it's just, it always kind of like, it multiplies on itself.
The Bulls are just so depressing to me, but it's been for several years now just a continued theme of them just wildly overrating how good that this team can be. Yeah. And I think that, you know, one of the most important things a GM does is just be realistic about, like, what are we working with here? And it's not much, honestly.
The general fan base, I know I would have forgiven them for the Vooch deal, but instead you double down. You signed
him. Exactly, double down. He's double down, triple down,
he, 3 years. They gave him three. Who's given him 3 years? And you know, if they would have given him 2 years, you could have, I think it would have been a much easier trade at the last deadline if he's on an expiring deal, but you got him for another year. And it's like, my goodness, it's just so.
And I know, and you know, again, this is kind of sad to say, but the truth is like that Vooch extension and even the Patrick Williams extension, like, the Bulls haven't actually been good enough for those to really, like, hurt them the way that that bad money could hurt other teams. And, you know, honestly, I actually don't, this is going to be a hot take. I know that this is definitely contrary to what most people think, but I actually don't think that the Patrick Williams deal is that disastrous. You know, we were saying the same thing about, you know, DeAndre Hunter, who I think is a pretty comparable player and actually makes more. He's like at the $22 million range. You know, we were saying this about him a few years ago, that he was a negative asset, that was a bad contract. And, you know, he had improved his shooting. He kind of trimmed some of the fat off of his game, and the Hawks turned him into a neutral value asset and flipped him, you know, at this deadline. So I think that just by virtue of the position that he plays, the bar for, you know, wings, just because they're so in demand, the bar is pretty low. So he can defend. The shot has to start falling again. I mean, I feel like, within a year or two, it'll be fine. I'm not super worried about the Pat Williams deal. I know that's a hot take though.
I'm just shocked to hear that. I hope you're right. Like, cause I do, there is value if you can return to 40% from three and play decent defense, but.
I mean, DeAndre Hunter was a pretty similar player a few years ago, and he's making more.
I've always loved DeAndre Hunter. DeAndre Hunter, though, performed in playoff in the series of the year that Boston won. Oh, absolutely. The year when Boston won the championship, the first round, Atlanta put the scare of God in them in that first, I think it was the first round. Was that the year? It might have been the year that Milwaukee won. I can't remember exactly what it was. DeAndre Hunter was awesome in that series. I always feel like, I've always been a DeAndre Hunter guy. I love him every
time. I mean, I feel like he has a lot of, I've always been not a DeAndre Hunter guy, but I feel like he has a lot of the same flaws that Pat does. I mean, he's kind of a ball stopper. I guess he can shoot in theory, but again, he's a ball stopper. I've always called DeAndre Hunter, you know, he's more of a 2-and-D player because he used to love those mid-range, but he trimmed some of that fat off his game.
He shot great last year from three. I thought he played really well last year. Maybe you're right.
I mean, really, really well as a stretch. He did improve. He improved significantly his last year in Atlanta, and he went from a negative value asset to a neutral value asset. And they were able to move him because ultimately, you know, that 3-4, there's a 6-8 wing, obviously one of the worst rebounders in the league. Pat Williams is cut from a similar cloth. Just, you know, they're from the Jeremy Grant school of guys who ball watch instead of rebounding. But
yeah, jog slowly back down the way, which is the P Will standstill P Will special. I don't know. Like I kind of agree. It's a bad deal because you didn't need to give him a player option. If SGA doesn't get a player option, you look at the player option was extinct essentially. The fifth-year player option until the Bulls gave it to Patrick Williams. It's like crazy to me. If you look at everybody who was signed around that period, no one got a player option in 5 years. But he got it. He didn't deserve it. Played terrible the year before. He had one good month. He was injured. It was every negotiating advantage was in the Bulls' favor, and they they just threw it all away. It was a joke. It was a joke. So, I mean, I think deep down, you know, that's true, right? Like, I mean, I understand what you're arguing.
I also think in fairness, like he wasn't, I feel like he wasn't this terrible, like the year before. Like he really fell off. It's almost like he got paid and then he fell off a cliff. So to some extent, like I feel like that the number that they gave him was a little less egregious at the time it was signed, and then he just declined so rapidly, I felt like.
Well, we got to be honest about what happened the year before he did sign the contract. He played so awful in the preseason and in the first 10 games of the year, he lost his starting spot. Mm-hmm. He was terrible. I think it was 19. The first 19 games of the season, he was terrible. He was a big reason the Bulls started off so poorly. He had a really good December when there was no pressure on him again. And then he got hurt. So he played well for like 14 games. I think it was 14 games. I did an analysis on this before. There was nothing in that performance that should have justified. When I said well, like he was averaging like 15 points a game. Like at 14 points a game. You know, like I understand that's what guys, if play good three, shoot 40% from three and play decent D, you're going to get $20 million a year. This just a 4 year and the player option is, that's the part that really just put me over the top. And honestly, like I thought, a player, look at how the Cavs handled their negotiations, you know, with Isaac Okoro, who had a better year, who was a better player in that year. They got him for 13 or 12 or 11 because they actually played hardball on him. And that's what the Bulls should have done with Patrick Williams.
They should have. But yeah. I mean, honestly, for me with Patrick Williams, the most disappointing thing itself is just Patrick Williams, not the contract. It's like, I just wish he was a better player. Like,
just play at this hard. Point, he doesn't play. I just saw that interview with McConnell where he's talking about playing hard as a skill.
Pat has always been kind of a low motor guy.
Yes. Yes. That's a huge, and that's something as someone who's coached my son and, you know, been involved with the game. That is something that is incredibly hard to learn. You can't. You either got it or you don't. You either play out there at, you know, 110 miles an hour or you play half speed all the time. And that's the issue. He's still going to be effective. Like, I kind of agree a little bit what you're saying. Like, I do feel like, hey, if he comes back at 40% from three, he's a fine role player. But this idea that he was baby Kawhi was such a joke. And that was evidence.
I mean, in fairness, they say that about literally anyone who's like, even, you know, any 6'8 wing, they say that about. So
are you in love with Mattis? Do you think he's,
I think he's a fun player.
I sense that you're not as high on him as
I am. No, I mean, I think he's a good player. I'm excited for him, but it's also just like, what does Matis Puzelis do? I feel like you need way more than Matis Puzelis to be a serious team. And again, this is like, don't interpret this as criticism of Puzelis, because I do think he's a really good player. Really, like, he's fun to watch at the very least. Like, that's nice to see for the first time in a Bulls uniform, someone who's like actually fun to watch.
Yes.
So I like him a lot, but I just feel like you just need so much more than just one young good player.
Well, I think we're like putting him in the same spot that we did with Patrick Williams. Like, I feel like we're setting him up for failure. Like, his season is discussed by fans like it was some incredible, you know, just wow, this guy, you know, he's for sure, you know, going to be an all-star. And I'm like, I don't know how you possibly get that from a realistic observation of what he did. So in general,
yeah, I've had several Bulls fans tell me that Jalen Johnson is not as good as him.
That's insane. And that angers me that somebody's that dumb, which is a joke. It's a joke. I mean, I'm not saying that he can't be as good, but I don't know how you come to that conclusion watching what you've seen so far. That's insane. And like, there's a general attitude, I think, from the fan base that Billy ruined him, which is, I really don't like that, you know, idea. I think it's ludicrous. To me, it was proven when he entered his starting lineup, like he sucked for 10 games. He was terrible for 10 games after the All-Star break. And then eventually he got caught up with the rest of the team playing so well and people weren't paying attention to him that he started to build some confidence and played well. And he finished strong. But this idea that he was great last year or even good for a rookie is, to me, like so far off. There were many great signs. We should all be excited about his progress as a player, but holy cow, we act like he made an all-star team, some people. You know, like he barely made the second all, I mean, he played well enough at the end of the year that I think he was firmly on the second all-star, you know, second
rookie
team.
I mean, second team all-rookie that team should just be eliminated in my opinion. I'm not
well said, I agree. Yeah. The Tyrus Thomas made that great achievement. So, and so did Patrick Williams. So what does that say?
I will say, I think that Buzelis has shown a lot more than Patrick Williams did in his rookie year. So whatever.
No doubt.
Whatever you want to do with that, I guess is.
No, I agree with you. I think that's well said. Last topic, I did want to talk about, what is your take on Billy Donovan? I can't get a very clear idea about what you think of Billy as a coach. And you,
I mean, I would, if the Bulls are ever at a spot where Billy Donovan is like the biggest problem that we have, like that would just be, I feel like that'd be so awesome. I can't imagine, honestly, like we're looking at the Bulls and all the issues that they have. I just really don't think that Billy Donovan's that high on the list, honestly.
Amen. I agree 100%. You look at the defensive talent on this team, and I kind of mentioned this in a previous pod, but we were 19th in defensive efficiency. Like, I can't even believe it. When you think about how bad this team is defensively in terms of defensive talent, like difference makers, there's like one plus defender, maybe two, and one of them, Io, was out for like most of the year. Mm-hmm. And somehow we were top 20 with the human rim presenter and Vooch as our backline defender. And, you know, it's crazy to me that people don't see this. Like, I think the vast majority of coaches in the NBA, this team is a bottom three defensive efficiency team. To be in the top 20 is a miracle, and I owe it all to Billy Donovan.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with every decision that he's made, but again, like the Bulls have so many issues that aren't Billy Donovan. Like, I can't imagine thinking that that's like, and then something that I've learned is that I feel like there's every NBA fan base basically hates their coach. I mean, I've even seen calls for Spo to be fired.
Yeah.
So it's like at some point we got to just take fan complaints about coaching with a grain of salt.
Wrap this up. What were your thoughts on Tibbs being fired? Were you a Tibbs fan, or did you see the truth that he was very limited in his minutes per game?
I mean, look, I have a fondness for Tibbs just because, you know, he was the coach in Chicago when I was growing up. So I was surprised, but at the same time, I wasn't surprised. There definitely were times where I felt like New York's offense was just so much less than the sum of its parts.
Yes, agreed.
So I kind of get it, but at the same time, it's like, how do you fire a guy after, you know, that, you know, making such a successful run? Like, it really did feel kind of cold, especially given the relationship he has with some of the players and, you know, the front office, Leon Rose. So it did shock me, but at the same time, it didn't shock me because I think everyone knew that Tibbs wasn't going to be the guy to take them. You know, he was going to be the guy to kind of bring some normalcy to the franchise that had been, frankly, just a disaster for most of my lifetime. So, you know, he did his job, but I feel like everyone knew that eventually, you know, his time was going to come. I didn't think his time would come so short after, you know, the franchise's first conference finals in, you know, a long, long time. I'll say that.
What was the temperature of the fan base in that firing? I'm curious, like, what would you estimate the percentage of fans who were happy and the percentage of fans who were down?
I mean, I interact with Knicks fans who are like the top one percentile of like fandom. So those types of fans tend to be really more like tuned into rotations and a lot more, you know, overly critical of the coach. I think a lot of the casual fans were a little bit surprised, but a lot of the fans that I know were not surprised. But again, you have to kind of take that with a grain of salt because every fan base hates their coach, and a lot of times I feel like it's really not warranted the way that they think it is.
I would have loved to heard what they were saying when Game 6 against Boston, when Boston had their subs in with 5 minutes left in. Mikal Bridges and OG and Anobi were still out on the floor up 30. To me, that's like
unforgivable. It is rough seeing some of that, but
it's insane. And everybody's just like, it's Tibbs being Tibbs. It's just like everybody's completely fine with it. And
I mean,
it's bizarro to me. It's like insane.
I know that he gets a certain reputation, but he was more flexible, and he made, you know, he did some things in that series that I didn't expect.
Because he was desperate. So, in the series against the Pacers or in against Boston?
Against Boston. You know, he did some things I didn't expect. And I mean, you got to give him some credit. He brought normalcy to a franchise that has been, again, like basically a disaster. A circus is maybe a better word, a circus for most of my life. And I'm not that young either. So it's like he brought some normalcy to that team. He went way deeper in the playoffs multiple times than anyone expected. And he brought them the first conference finals run that in, you know, a long time.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, you know, it is sad, especially knowing his age, that like that's probably his last head coaching gig. I mean, he's almost 70. So, you know, he'll be on, you know, some coaching staff, I'm sure. But, you know, it is kind of sad as a Bulls fan to know that like the Tibbs era of head coaching is.
He'll find solace in the $30 million he's getting to do nothing over the next 3 years. I agree with you. It is a shame, but I'm sure somebody will hire him as a consultant. And if he wants to coach, I'm sure he can get a job somewhere. Probably not as the head coach, but you know, I'm sure there are
organizations. I mean, if he's at the age where he should probably just retire, I guess he doesn't really have a family to hang out with, but he could play golf or something, but.
Yeah, enjoy life. It's not all about basketball, but Tibbs is the kind of guy which you absolutely could see him like looking for another job or whatever.
Yeah.
Taking over Charlotte. Anyhow, BC, you were fantastic. Thanks again for coming on the Big Red Bus. Where can people find you? Tell us where where everybody can find you on X. And are you on Blue Sky and all those other sites?
I mean, I have an account, I think, but I don't use it that much. But yeah, just social media, I guess. Betsy Cash Money.
BC, it's awesome to talk to you. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time. Got to have you on again soon with DT on the bus. We'll have a big, great debate. So it'll be fantastic. And I'll laugh the whole time as you guys go on.
Well, at this point, I'm just as negative as Doug is. So we don't even have anything to argue about.
One last question. Do you ever miss Mark MK Hoops? You ever miss him and his thoughts?
You know, I do, but to be honest, the Bulls have just been so depressing the last few seasons that I've kind of, I've had to stay away from any Bulls discourse. So apologies to all the Bulls content creators that I haven't been consuming their content as much because the team has been a little sad. But,
well, hopefully the BRB
they give us something to root for soon.
Hopefully the BRB still remains a staple on your podcast listening.
Always.
Great to hear. Thanks a lot. Thanks, BC. Good talking to you. Have a good night. I'll talk to you again
soon. Have a good night. Bye.
Bye.